Welcome to the Global Health Podcast at Georgetown University, where we are charting new directions in health and development. Where here in our nation's capital, we have our hands on the pulse of global health. We bring you conversations with faculty and leaders in the field. From hearing about research in global health, alumni pursuits, and student field research abroad, you'll experience it all here on the Global Health Podcast. Welcome and thank you for listening. Today I'll be speaking with Dr. Vincent Turbat. He is a health economist with over 40 years of international experience in more than 60 countries. His experience covers many areas, including health financing, cost-benefit and cost-effectiveness analysis, pharmaceuticals, health sector reform, health system strengthening, disease control, demographics, and HIV/AIDS projects. He is also a professor with over 30 years of teaching experience in macro and health economics. He's instructed undergraduate, graduate, and doctoral students in France and now here at Georgetown University. Today, we'll also discuss his roles at the World Bank, which included being the country manager of Niger and a senior health economist for different regions. Thank you for joining me and welcome to the Global Health Podcast at Georgetown.
My pleasure.
Now, you have had such an interesting career. I'm just really excited to discuss some of your past employment and your teaching here at the university. Just as a review, we discussed some of your experiences and your introduction, but you actually began your career teaching economics in France. So can you tell us a little bit about that and then maybe what inspired you to move out of teaching?
Absolutely. So, as you said, I started in teaching, but it's because I wanted to do a PhD. Uh-huh. And in order to finance a PhD, or to finance myself, as you know, studies are not very costly in France, but you need some income anyway. So I decided to teach on the side. While I was doing my doctorate studies. So it's why I came to teaching. And then I liked the independence that I had as a professor.
Yeah.
And therefore, I stayed maybe a little bit longer than I wanted in teaching in France. And I went to several universities.
Okay.
But I was doing a lot of research at that time, and especially research in health economics.
Ah.
So I was extremely interested, and I had a very good experience with the Hospice Civil de Lyon, meaning the main hospital in Lyon, which is the second largest city in France.
Okay.
And we had a very good research group, and we published things, and we were collaborating directly with the hospital.
Ah.
So I was extremely interested. But I think that my best move is when I decided that I didn't want to pursue, you know, the traditional economist way, but that I wanted to specialize in health economics.
Hmm.
And at that time, I'm talking about now 45 years ago, you had very few health economists in the world.
Imagine.
And in France, we were, maybe 10 health economists. So very few. And it's why I landed a job at the World Bank.
Wow.
Because I didn't apply. At that time, I wanted to move to something else.
Uh-huh.
But then one day I received a call from the World Bank in my office.
Wow.
And they said, okay, we are looking for health economists to work in French-speaking countries. Your name has been proposed. At that time, I still don't know who proposed. But so my answer was word for word, why not?
Wow.
Let's give it a try.
Yeah.
And then I went through the interviews, and at that time, these interviews were really something, because I had a one day of interview in Paris.
Okay.
Then after this day, I was selected and sent to Washington for 3 days of interview in Washington.
Oh, wow.
And after the 3 days, matter of fact, I'm not honest. After the interview, I knew that I was chosen. But yeah, it's it was. And the best thing that happened to me to work for the World Bank.
Wow.
Because, you know, when you work at the World Bank, and especially at that time, I'm not sure that it's still the truth today, but at that time you were running your program with the Minister of Health of the countries where you were working. And matter of fact, I remain good friends with some of these ministers in Cambodia, in Laos, for example, where they were so sad to see me leave because they wanted me to be part of the country.
Wow.
But yeah, I was very fortunate to land this job at the bank.
That's exciting. And so you've held a number of roles and in our program, we've kind of heard some of your experience, and now you're teaching a number of classes. But can you speak some of like what your job entailed as a health economist? For you were a senior economist for the East Asian Pacific region as well as the African region for some time.
So when they recruited me at the World Bank, it was to be a member of what was called EDI at that time, which is a teaching department of the World Bank, meaning that I had to organize seminars, and these seminars were delivered in the field, and the topics were health financing, pharmaceuticals, health sector reform, then HIV/AIDS. So I organized, I don't know how many seminars, but a lot and in Africa, in Asia, in Latin America. So it was quite interesting, but it was still too close to teaching.
Yeah.
And I wanted to move to operations.
Yeah.
So it's why I started to participate to operation missions as soon as I joined EDI.
Okay.
And then after 3 or 4 years, I moved to operations at that time in East Asia. The focus was Indonesia. It's a big country, a very interesting country.
And then eventually, I think in around 2003, you ended up as the country manager for Niger, correct?
Yes. You know... it happens sometimes that you are not very pleased with your manager.
Yeah.
And it's what happened to me. And I said, okay, I don't want to stay working with this person. So I wanted to try the experience of being a country manager, which is a resident for the World Bank in a country.
Yeah.
So I was living in Niger.
Yeah.
And also a very good move on my part because I experienced a fantastic 3 years in Niger.
What was probably your most memorable experience living there?
In Niger? You're going to laugh.
I like laughing.
I created the Rugby Federation in Niger.
Ah.
And I also created an academy, rugby academy, but the goal was to provide food to children, to provide school help to children, to do some vaccination and that kind of thing.
Wow.
So I was using rugby as a vector to do development work. And this academy is still... living, and we are reaching about 250 kids a year per year, both males and females, and they play rugby.
Yeah,
and they like
it. Which is one of your favorites, right?
Definitely my favorite. I've always been playing rugby, and not anymore, unfortunately. But yeah, I played rugby, I coached rugby, I referred rugby. So, yeah, it was my game. But, it was a very nice experience, and I'm very pleased that it's still on today. It's still running, and we are increasing the number of kids.
Wow.
And then some associations are co-sponsoring mm-hmm. this academy. So that's very good.
So how did your work at the World Bank lead you back into teaching eventually? Because you've been here at Georgetown and have kind of moved from adjunct up into regular teaching roles now. So what do you find most rewarding about teaching and being back into teaching?
Okay, so I was not planning to be back to teaching. I was planning to go back to France.
Ah.
But Dr. Lys, I was working with him at that time. He was consulting for me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, why don't you come with us and try? And so I came and tried, and I'm here.
You're here. And you've been here for?
For eight years now. Yeah.
Yeah,
8 years. And I plan to, if my health is okay, to continue 5 more years.
Yeah.
But then after, I will go back to Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. So can you tell us about some of the classes that you teach here at the university? Because you teach undergraduate and graduate students within the Global Health
Department. So for undergrads, mm-hmm. I teach this Introduction to Global Health,
mm-hmm.
but it's open for the students that are not from our department.
Okay, yeah.
And it works very well, and many students who attend this class after shift to our department.
Right, you must get a mix of like pre-med students and health and development.
They come from college, from every part of Georgetown University.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem very interested in global health.
Yeah.
And the fact, this introduction, global health covers such a large field.
Right.
So they are very interested. One day we talk about health financing. The other day we talk about mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Another day, environmental health. Each class is different. And I use a lot of guest speakers who are specialists of their field. So this is very interesting. I like this class, very, very stimulating.
Mm-hmm.
Then also for undergrads, I teach what is called political economy of health and development.
Okay.
So the first part is mostly the basics of health economics.
Mm-hmm.
Then after economics applied to health.
Mm-hmm.
And I do this part a lot of cost effectiveness, cost benefit analysis. And then the third part is health and development.
Okay.
So how, as an economist, you analyze this relationship between health and development.
And development, how interesting.
So that's for undergrads. Yeah. And then for grads, I have a class that you know a little bit.
I took last semester, right?
So health economics and financing,
mm-hmm.
where the first part is also the basics of health economics, but where we develop health financing, but also cost-benefit, cost-effectiveness analysis.
Yeah.
Here I'm more specialized at what I do with the undergrads,
mm-hmm.
and I'm trying to provide you with tools that you can use after in your career. For me, my teaching is focused on skills, but a critical thinking of using these skills.
So,
I
think you did an excellent job because our cohort had definitely a mix of experience. Like I'd come into the program with no economic background at all. I I didn't know what a cost-benefit analysis was or any of those things. So I think you did an excellent job just bringing, you know, 30 of us from different backgrounds to explaining a lot of the basics and then bringing us through the syllabus in the class to being able to write a cost-benefit analysis or cost-effectiveness analysis at the end of the program and understanding some of the economics behind health. And so I definitely gained a lot from that class last semester, as it was something that, or I guess I going back to your intro to global health, and so some of us come from different backgrounds, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. having, oh, we just want to work with doctors, or we just want to work with kids, or we mm-hmm. just want to, you know, work on environmental health. But then you realize there's all these separate pieces, and I think that your class in health economics and financing helped me realize, like, oh, what a big piece that was and how that fits into the bigger picture. So definitely a valuable and highly, it's a required course for for our class, and I now see why.
But that's the goal.
Yes. Yeah.
So also for the grads, I have electives. Mm-hmm. So one is on health insurance and risk management.
Right.
So we can go into details of the main health insurance system in the world. So what risk pooling is about and how you can provide the coverage and the financial protection that people need.
Mm-hmm.
And we work on case studies. Mostly, countries and other things besides. And this year, I'm very pleased because one of the students, mm-hmm. and she still has to go in the field, as you know, but she has already been recruited by a company working on health insurance issues,
and
especially on managing Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what a neat opportunity.
And she fared very well during the interviews because mm-hmm. I think that she had the background mm-hmm. to do so.
Wow.
So that's one. And then the second one at this point is called costing, financing, budgeting.
Mm-hmm.
I plan to extend this class to what I would call costing, financing, and budgeting health program.
Oh, okay.
That would be a full 3 credits mm-hmm. With a practical focus on how to design and implement a health program project.
Wow. It's a 1 credit elective right now.
At this point, it's a 1 credit on mm-hmm. costing, but I propose to make it 3 credits and mm-hmm. to have time to really work on how to design and how to implement a project that you need to finance, to budget, to plan. So,
right.
And again, it will be tools.
Yeah, I think my colleagues that took the class this semester all came out thinking this was very practical. This was exactly kind of what we needed to be able to implement some of these tools. So there are some classes in the program mm-hmm. that are informative, theoretical, but then there are a lot of classes that just give you these hands-on practical tools, and I think that's definitely one of them.
Yeah, this year we were able to budget a program, a family program.
So
that was very interesting, and the results were good, matter of fact. They did a very good job. They were working by group of 4, they are... proposals and the costing and mm-hmm. the budgeting were very well done.
Oh, good. I think they all thought it was a lot of work for the short amount of
time.
But they all came out, everybody saying, wow, look at what we can do and what we have done and accomplished. Mm. So Definitely wonderful. So I also want to take some time today to just talk about the chapters that you were able to contribute to the book titled Africa's Population in Search of a Demographic Dividend. And can you take some time to just tell us about your current research and what you're working on in those, those things that you...
So when I came to this department, my neighbor is Dr. John May, who is a demographer. And he was working on this demographic dividend.
Right.
And one day he submitted a paper to me and said, could you review it?
Okay.
And I said, yes, with pleasure.
Yeah.
I reviewed it and I told him, listen, John, I don't like it. So he said, why? And I said, because when you look at the demographic dividend, and let's explain first what is this demographic dividend. You look at the dependency ratio. Dependency ratio is the result of a change in the age group structure.
Right.
Okay. So because there is this demographic transition,
right,
you go from high level of mortality and fertility to low level of mortality and fertility.
Right.
So the structure, age structure, is going to
change,
be modified. And normally, the result should be that you have less dependence to support per person
working,
in age, in working age.
Right.
So, and it's where I disagreed with him, because I said, listen, you can be in working age and have no job.
Right, this is very true.
So, and in this case, you go from the category of dependent because of your age, underage, to dependent because of unemployment.
Right.
So I said, you don't improve the dependency ratio if there is no employment.
Right.
And so we started to work on the issues of what needs to be done in order to employ first. But then there is a second issue. You can be employed and you can receive a wage which is not a living wage.
Correct.
And it's very often the case in Africa, where people are working in the informal sector.
Right.
So if you cannot cover your consumption, then you need someone to help you to cover it. And so you see, we are now working on three different dependency ratio. The first one is what we call the demographic dependency ratio, where you compare the ages, so the ones who cannot work because of their age or who are supposed not to work, because we know that a lot of children are working and a lot of elderly people are still working, because they need to. And the ones who are in a working age, from 19 to 65, for example. Then the second one is to look at the employment dependency ratio. People, the ones that are working, the ones that are not working, okay?
Right.
And then the third one that we call the sociodemographic ratio, dependency ratio, sorry, is the comparison of people who can cover their consumption and people who cannot, meaning you compare income and consumption. If your consumption is higher than your income, you are dependent. If your income is higher than your consumption, then you are a provider. You support others. So this issue is very important. Why? Because it has been observed that in East Asia, if these tigers fared so well and experienced such a rapid growth of their economy, it's precisely because at that time they had improved, but drastically improved, dependency ratio.
Okay.
So is it going to be the same for Africa so that they could reap a demographic dividend, the demographic dividend being the surplus that you have by freeing, you know, the resources that you need to provide to your dependents. Mm-hmm. If you have less dependents, all these resources, you can use them in a more productive way.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So the problem is that in Africa, their fertility is not decreasing as fast as it did in East Asia, for example.
Correct.
And therefore, we don't see the effect. Matter of fact, with some research assistant from this department, we did some calculations and we came up with this outstanding result is that the African countries are not yet back to the dependency ratio of 1950.
Wow. Oh, what does that leave us as kind of looking forward? What does that mean?
That means that they are not ready to reap
the benefits.
Demographic dividend soon.
Wow. How interesting that is. Do you have any advice, or what would your advice be going forward, having this information?
It's what I did as a consultant for the World Bank lately, which is part of a program called SWED, which means Sahelian Woman Empowerment and Demographic Dividend.
Okay.
So we are advising the government on the policies to be implemented in order to reap demographic dividend.
Wow. That's very interesting. And I think it helps us understand how research informs policy and decision-making and consulting and leading to better health outcomes. When we have data and these kind of ratios that and dependency rates that you are calculating really help us understand how to move forward towards better health outcomes. So that's really interesting. So I guess just to kind of wrap us up here today, I like to ask a lot of the people that I interview, who inspires you in your work and in the field of global health, and what really motivates you to keep contributing?
Tough question.
It is,
very tough
yeah.
question. That's not easy to answer because you are inspired by so many people and so many things, and as you know, life is not linear.
That's
so
very true.
You discover things, and then after what you thought was the truth reveals not to be. But I think that when I joined the bank, and matter of fact, it's one of the first person I worked for in operations, was a man called Sergiu Luculescu, a Romanian origin.
Yeah.
And he had worked at the WHO, was working at the World Bank. And I started to work on his team. He was a task team leader. And I learned so much from him. And he was so humble.
Yeah.
And it confirmed what I think, that the most humble person are generally the brightest one. And if you need to beat your drum, it's because there is a problem somewhere.
Yeah, that's great. And then would you have any advice to give students maybe wanting to pursue a career in health economics?
In health economics or in global health? Because I think that in global health, you can do so many things.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, from biology, so fundamental research, from medical, all the medical, nursing, all these mm-hmm. things. But then after you have, if you are into computer, you can work on the surveillance system or on the medical information system. Yeah. If you like law, there is a lot of law to be done in these areas, and you can work also on human rights. On so the field is huge.
Yeah.
With regard to health economics, same. The field is very huge because you can work for a consulting firm, mm-hmm. you can work for an institutions, you can work for an NGO, you mm-hmm. can you have so many opportunities.
And I would say a very unique skill set to add to the field.
Yeah, I think that we are not good in biology and all these mm-hmm. things, definitely. As you know, to be a health economist, and I would recommend this, you need to go through public health or global health.
Mm-hmm.
As definitely a plus to your economy.
Right.
If you, myself, I was a macroeconomist,
right.
Working on issues linked to growth and mm-hmm. development.
Right.
Okay. And I really shifted to health economics. But in order to shift to health economics, I needed to learn epidemiology, things like that. And public health in general.
Yeah.
Then after, you are a health economist, so you have the public health vision,
mm-hmm.
but you see through the lens of economics.
Economics. What a great a way to see it, and I think it's bringing all of our perspectives together. We've talked on the podcast with the data analysis and researchers and the Dr. Bowie, the epidemiologist in
yes.
our department, and just seeing how all of these come together to contribute to global health is something pretty amazing. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
For your time. So take care.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the Global Health Podcast, brought to you by the Department of International Health here at Georgetown University. We welcome you to learn more by visiting our website at globalhealthms.georgetown.edu or by following us on Facebook at Georgetown University's Masters of Science in Global Health.